Okay, now I will discuss the homework that is proposed and that you should be able to finish within 2 weeks. Just to illustrate what you should do, it's a good idea to open the report of this student of 3 years ago, which is a nice report that I will just use to illustrate what should be done in the homework. The homework is the same as the one in which was done 3 years ago, apart from the data files, but apart from that, it's the same. So you are provided two data files. Each of them contains the results for two different observables. This data have been obtained in a Monte Carlo simulation. It's of no relevance for you to know which system and how they were obtained. The important point is that these are the measurements. In each file, there is the Monte Carlo time, which is the first column, and then there are two columns in which there are the values of the different observables. So at time one, we perform the measurement of U1 and U2, and they are reported in the first line of the first file, data one. While in data two, there are the values at the same iteration of U3 and U4. So you have this set of data. So there are several things that you should do. First thing, check that the data are thermalized. This is trivial. You just take the data and you plot them as a function of the Monte Carlo time, and you look if there is a transient, if there are trends in the data, and you should find the figure which is more or less the one which is reported in the assignment of the student as figure one, and you see you should find something which is more or less flat. This ensures you that the data are really thermalized. Then the second thing is to compute the errors for each observable using the blocking analysis, using the blocking method. So the first thing you should do is compute the average value, of course, of these variables f, and then compute the variance of these variables u, assuming that they are completely independent. Note that when we discuss uncorrelated data, there was the problem of n minus 1. But of course here the number of data is so large, I think it is 200,000, that of course n minus 1 is completely relevant. So you can use n as this is the same as n minus 1. So you compute the variance for each observable, so you compute the error assuming that they are independent, and you put them in a table, which is table one. The first entry of table one should be the results for independent errors, because we want to realize how the errors are underestimated if we don't use the correct expression. Then we block the data, and block the data are here in this assignment. You use the equations which are in the homework, so equations 5 and 6, and for each of them, you compute the error, the blocked error. So you compute sigma square 1, sigma square 2, sigma square 3, and they are reported, as you can see, in figure 2. In figure 2, there are the expressions for the errors computed from the data using the blocking method. And this is what you, and what you see is exactly what you expect. The errors at the beginning increase with the size of the blocking. They increase more or less smoothly. Then they reach a plateau, and after the plateau, they begin to fluctuate. This is certainly true for the first and the second observable. Or they decrease on the other side for larger values of k. You know that sigma square k should be an increasing function. So whenever you see that it decreases, you know that this is not correct, that this is just due to the error on the error, because of course you estimate the variance has an error, and it means that now the error is so big that your estimate of the variance is no longer reliable. So what is the correct estimate for sigma square? How do you estimate the plateau? And you see here, these are the red lines. You look more or less where the data becomes stable, and you estimate your sigma square as the 2-3 values where the estimate is more or less constant. And here the estimate which have been chosen by the student are indicated by these red lines, and they are also reported in table 1. So you can clearly see from table 1 how big is the difference between the errors computed using the independent error formula and the blocking method. You would underestimate the errors in some cases by a factor of 10 if you were not using the blocking method. So correlations in this data are very important. So this is point 1, the blocking analysis. The second analysis is the analysis of the autocorrelation function. So you measure the autocorrelation function and the integrated autocorrelation time. And okay, here you go to figure 3, where CK is shown. CK is shown, this is the first the column of the figures on the left, and you see that the function decreases. Function decreases, then it begins to fluctuate around 0. Here probably the scale on the horizontal axis is too big. There is no reason to go up to 700 as it's done here. You can really stop, given this type of figures, when k is of order 250. Because you see, it becomes 0 more or less when it's 170, 180, then becomes to fluctuate. You want to see the fluctuations, of course, to be sure that they are real fluctuations, and then you can just plot the figure, let's say, up to 300. And then you compute tau int in this way. Here there is another plot on the right, another column, which is called tau int k. And this is the summation, 1/2 plus the sum over k, sum over I, of the correlation function, normalized correlation function, up to k. So here there is tau in k, which is defined essentially in formula 11, summing up to k. So here there is the equation up to k max. So imagine that you do the summation up to k. And so if you do the summation up to k, of course the function tau in k increases. And then the function may do several different things. It may still keep increasing or decrease depending on the behavior of the correlation function. So here the rule is to stop tau in k the first time the correlation function becomes negative. Of course, maybe that the additional decrease that you observe here for u1 and u2 is still physical, but you see that the error is of the order, let's say, of 40, 45. So the error is of order 10, 15% on tau int, which means that you have an error on the error, it contains the square root, of the order of 10%. And remember that all these methods, the blocking method, the autocorrelation time method, both of them usually provide errors with a 10% error on the error. So when we say that the result is plus or minus 17, well, 17, maybe also 20, maybe also 14, we don't know. A 10% error, a 15% error on that error is possible, but we don't care so much. We don't care to know if the error is really plus or minus 17, plus or minus 19, plus or minus 20, 15. Okay, they are more or less the same as far as we can estimate. So in this way, we get the estimate of tau int. And this estimate of tau int allows you to compute the error using the autocorrelation function analysis. And then you can compare the error using the blocking method and the autocorrelation function analysis. And you see that more or less, with a small deviation, here the deviation is most 7.5%, and these two errors are typically the same. Okay, so this is the rule. One important point, remember the number of significant digits. Don't write errors with 13 digits. The error at most should have 2 digits, no more than 2 digits on the error. It makes no sense to write the error with 17 digits. Remember, 2 digits only. So this closes the analysis 2, the point 2, and then we have the jackknife analysis. So in order to do the jackknife analysis, we need to have data which are essentially independent. So the homework tells you to generate block variables with blocks of length 2,500. You should check first that this data, these blocks, are essentially independent, which requires that the block length is really larger than the autocorrelation time you have computed at point 2 of the homework. So you should check that this is correct. At that point, you have these blocks. We have bin data with bins of length 2,500, and then you can use them as independent. I think you will have 80 blocks, and then you do the jackknife analysis. So the purpose of the jackknife analysis is that of computing the errors on these ratios Ri. So before doing the jackknife analysis, of course, you can compute already the mean values, because you know the mean value of the numerator and denominator, and you can estimate the error using two different formulas. One is the independent error formula, and the other is the worst error formula, because you already know the error on both numerator and denominator. Here, the homework suggests you to use the errors computed at point 2, the errors computed using the autocorrelation analysis. So the first thing, you compute the independent error and the worst error, and you put them in this table. So it's here, it's table 3, so you get there are two errors, and they will be different, of course. In general, the independent error formula and the worst error formula will be different. Then the point is to compute the jackknife error. So the jackknife error, remember, consists in the following. You take out one, let's call iteration, one block in our case, but let's call them iterations. And you compute the quantity using the other ones. So for instance, you forget about the first iteration, so the first block for all different four quantities. So you do not consider the first block for the variable U1, the first block for the variable U2, the first block for the variable U3, and the first block for the variable U4. You compute the average on the other 79. You compute the ratios, the three ratios, using the 79 blocks. And this is your first jackknife average, the jackknife average in which you have discarded block 1. Then you repeat the operation discarding block 2, then you repeat the operation discarding block 3, and so on. In this way, you have 80 different estimates of the ratios, then you compute jackknife average, and you compute the jackknife variance, and you use the general formula that we have discussed. So here you use this formula to compute the error, the jackknife error, and you report in the same table. One interesting thing, just for since we are doing the calculation, also verify how different is our improved jackknife estimate, the one in which we cancel the bias of order 1 over n, with the usual average in which we take the ratio of the sample mean. You expect this difference to be very tiny, because here we have a huge number of data. So just for the purpose of understanding how important the bias is, compute the two different estimates, the jackknife estimates, which has a bias of order 1 over n squared, and compare it with the usual estimate of the ratios, which is obtained by taking simply the ratio of the sample means. So this is the full homework. Of course, maybe that you have questions, something that you don't understand, something that you didn't understand about the previous lessons. So I have decided to organize some meetings using the meet conference, and we can meet again three times: next Wednesday, next Thursday. Next Thursday is a holiday, but maybe you have questions, there's no problem, we can also meet on Thursday, and then Wednesday after the holidays. And if you have questions, you just come and I will try to answer the question. But remember, I have problems writing, so try to formulate the question so that it's easy to answer. Okay, that's all.